certain age has to make, from being a demonstrator to becoming an instructor. I'm not going to lie to you. It hurts to come to that realization. I became a choreographer because I longed to dance, and nobody was making the kinds of dances I felt inside me. It was brutal to recognize that my body could no longer take me where my mind wanted to go. But I surely owed it to my dancers to turn on to myself the same brutal honesty with which I viewed their efforts. You can't make this kind of transition if you don't see the need for it. And you won't see the need if you don't analyze all your work habits. When you're in a rut, you have to question everything except your ability to get out of it. Dealing with ruts is a three-step process of seeing, believing, and repairing. First, you have to see the rut. If you're like me, you might not always know you're in a rut until it's too late. This is particularly true when you're creating on your own. At least I have the benefit of dancers giving me daily feedback, letting me know when things aren't working. You may be humming along with your novel, writing every day, and then 12 months later you find you have 400 pages that do not make sense. You have to make a habit of reviewing your efforts along the way, seeing where you've been and where you are, to make sure you're still heading in the right direction, if any. Second, admit you're in a rut. This is harder than it sounds. It requires an admission that you've made a mistake. People don't always do that. They'll even deny that they're in denial. Think about the last time your talents failed you on a project. Did you step back and admit it? Did you pause and wait for a better day? Or did you commit the creative equivalent of throwing good money after bad, trying to tough it out, hoping that time and sheer effort would pay off? It's a harsh thing to do and a bit ironic. The more disciplined you are, the less you'll be willing to cut your losses and stop the insanity. Truth is, all you're doing is deepening your rut. The third step is getting out of the rut. This is the hard part. Knowing and admitting a problem are not the same as solving it. But executing a solution is also the fun part because the solution saves you and gets you moving again. When optimism turns to pessimism during the creative process, you are in a serious, dangerous rut. So serious that it can become the mother rut. Depression. Forget spinning your wheels. The wheels have come off the wagon. Some people work their way out of it. Some people take a rest. Some people need the help of a doctor. I don't have the cure for this one. Often it's not the work alone that triggers the shift to pessimism. It can easily be something around you, too. Think, what's happened? Is it trouble with a spouse or a partner? Money? Health? The evening news? Distractions? The weather? What's making you hate the material you're producing? If it's something in your environment, the simplest solution is change your environment. If it's a micro rut, a momentary stall as you try to get from one part to another during the day's work, change your scenery. Get out of the house. Stare at the sky. Grab a hoe and tend your garden. Take a walk. Grab lunch with a friend. Call it a day. Do something that gets you out of the vehicle with the spinning wheels. One time, after a particularly grueling day of business heartbreaks and creative headaches, I built a fire in my living room fireplace. As I've said, I take great comfort and solace in heat. Heat is practically a sacrament for me, and watching a fire is one of life's miraculous pleasures. Fire has fabulous movement and spatial invention. It's constantly altering, never repeating itself. The flame changes shape, color, height, and depth. Tinker with the fire by adding a log, and it veers off at different angles, sometimes swelling into a vertical pyre, other times collapsing into a horizontal twinkle. The fire show kept me busy for 2 hours as the day turned into night. I was enveloped in a world of flickering light and thermal pleasure. Campfires have always encouraged the telling of stories, and I began to tell stories to myself. Answers to work problems began to march out of the flames, saying, "Try this beginning and then try this one next." Then I lit candles to enrich the sacrament. I would have released fireflies if they were to be found. Next, I ran a hot bath. Martha Graham liked to boast that she had done her floor series on the shores of all the world's oceans. When I knew her late in life, she was very arthritic and soaked in hot Epsom salts every day before coming to the studio. Alone in the tub, in another medium of exquisite heat, I began to relax, breathe easily, lose track of time, and shelter myself from invasive ideas. I was where I needed to be, on my way to becoming a complete blank. Leonardo da Vinci said, "Where there is heat, there is life." That vitality is the luxurious reward that heat provides me. Unlike most luxuries, though, it is abundant and virtually free. In its embrace, particularly after a day of despondency, I feel capable of anything. If you find yourself caught in a bigger rut, what you really need is a new idea. And the way to get it is by giving yourself an aggressive quota for ideas. A tough manager will have realistic quotas for his employees that he keeps to himself, and aggressive stretch quotas, anywhere from 10% higher to a lot more, which he imposes on his staff. If his people miss the stretch numbers but exceed the realistic goals, he's happy. If he's a superb manager, he knows how far they can stretch without breaking. I conduct an exercise along these lines when I lecture at colleges. I'll go backstage and come back with a found object. The last time I did this, I returned with a wooden stool. Then I gave the audience a challenge. You've got 2 minutes to come up with 60 uses for the stool.